TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
All right, episode number 131 in the history of Raised by Wolves is underway. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham here with you. And Danny, let's just get right into this because Wolves obviously made a huge trade over the weekend, trading Jimmy Butler for Robert Covington and Dario Saric.
It's been a bit of a process for me to train myself because I've always said Saric.
Saric, yeah.
I've always said that, but it.
So you
it
said
is,
Saric.
Yes.
Okay. Or, see, or I always said Saric.
I think I did Saric, but okay. it's Saric.
Saric. Yeah.
And it's been quite a couple of days for trying to train myself to say it. Like, I was on with Mackie and Judd earlier today, and if you haven't listened to that, go back and find that as well. But I, like, stumbled over myself when I was talking because I have to concentrate when I say that word because it doesn't come natural to me yet.
Yeah. I'm sort of adjusting to it. I'm still sort of but it's kind of like, it's almost like the Thibodeau versus Thibodeau sort of thing, right?
Where you're trying to
figure out, like, okay, well, it's Thibodeau, but everybody calls him Tibbs. So, like, how does that work? And forever when he was in Chicago, I always called him Thibodeau, and it's actually Thibodeau, but whatever. Anyway, so enter Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and Jared Bayless. And you, thank you. the Wolves officially introduced them today, Tuesday, November 13th. And you got a chance. You were down there, and you got a chance to talk to those guys today. So what were kind of your takeaways from meeting them and interacting with them and where they're at in terms of joining a new team? And it's certainly a different situation here than it was, than the situation that they left in Philadelphia was.
Well, I know the pressing question that everyone has was whether or not all of them got jackets from Karl Anthony Towns or if it was just Robert Covington. Yeah. And I can report that all three of them did get jackets. Both Saric and Bayless said that they got jackets from Towns. They just didn't publicize it on Instagram in the way that Covington did. So we can clear that up. Everyone got coats.
Now, Jared Bayless is, you know, he's about a normal size. I mean, he's a little taller.
He's listed
at
6'3", 200 pounds.
Right. But, like, Robert Covington is 6'9".
Correct.
Dario Saric is, what,
6'10"?
So, I mean, you're trying to find coats for those guys. It's a little bit different, right?
It's not the easiest thing to shop for, I would imagine. I've been trying to over the past couple of hours, and by the time you're listening to this, it may have come to fruition. It may have not have. I've been trying to picture Karl Anthony Towns going winter jacket shopping for those guys. And what would that interaction be like? And where would he go? And how does that work? Because I have to feel like that's a frustrating process to try and find jackets for guys the size of Robert Covington and Dario Saric.
Yeah, I would imagine that you would probably have to get some sort of, I mean, we'd have to get jackets that are, like, tailored or at least custom made for
guys that
are that tall.
Or is there just, like, a secret store that guys 6'7" and above have access to that
like,
the
basically
rest of us normal ones don't?
Pro athletes that they all – it's almost like it's a secret store that's in almost every city that has professional sports teams.
Like, is it in the basement of Mall of America here?
Right. And, like, only, like, the professional athletes know about it. Like, we don't – none of the rest of us, we don't know what it's called. We don't know where it's located. But, like,
it's a secret
all the
store.
Athletes, yeah, they all just like, yeah, come this way.
But
come
meet
us here.
In terms of actual basketball stuff, the one thing that I was most interested in on our last Raised by Wolves on Monday when we had Derek Bodner on of The Athletic in Philadelphia, we asked him about Dario Saric, and he's been a guy that's – he started his career coming off the bench in Philadelphia for the majority of his rookie year. And then over the course of this year and last year, in which the Sixers have been a successful team, he's started all but 5 games. So I asked him whether or not his comfort level would be the same coming off the bench, and Bodner told us that Saric is a guy that's more comfortable as a starter, and he confirmed that to me today. He said that, you know, he feels he plays his best when he's starting and he's more comfortable coming off the bench. He doesn't necessarily, or more comfortable as a starter, excuse me. He's not all that comfortable coming off the bench. So I'm curious how that plays. And I know Taj Gibson has said earlier this week, right after the trade was made, that he's comfortable doing whatever. He doesn't want it to be a story. He doesn't want to talk about whether or not he's starting or going off the bench. He wanted to answer that question one time. Doesn't care if it's the bench. Doesn't care if it's starting. He wants to win. So I do think that it might not be Wednesday night against the Pelicans, but I do think we will see Šarić put into that starting lineup because he's more comfortable there.
What does a starting front court of Cat and Šarić look like in your mind? Offensively, I think it could be really, really good because we know both of them are obviously very talented offensively, Cat especially. But defensively is where I have a bit of a question mark with that combination. Is that going to be good enough? I mean, right now it's with the way that, with where this team is at. I mean, I think you just start those two guys together because it's kind of a lost season, and you got to see what you have out of Šarić anyway. But
and now you've invested in him,
right? Exactly. But big picture, is that a front court combination that can be successful defensively in your mind?
I don't know about that defensively. And offensively, I think you can look at what they did in Philadelphia with Embiid and Šarić and had success there because from an offensive profile, Embiid and Towns aren't incredibly different. They're both very, very talented offensive players. The defensive side of the ball, that's where they could definitely struggle here. Embiid is an all-defensive team. I think he was second-team all-defense.
Elite-level defense.
Last year for Philadelphia. The guy is a defensive monster. So that can kind of hide some deficiencies that other players may have. We all know Towns isn't anywhere near that level defensively. He's been okay at times. He tends to chase blocks a little bit too much. And I think some people get caught up in block having more blocks, meaning you're a good defender.
Right.
Like if you look at Hassan Whiteside, how many blocks he racks up, and he genuinely cares about his number of blocks, but he's not a good defender because he chases so many of them. Yeah, he's going to get some of them, but how many weak side rebounds does he allow because he chases a block, leaves his guy, the shot misses, and it's an easy putback dunk for the other team.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things that need to be eliminated. And Embiid's a much better rebounder too. That's something that I know on Monday night against the Nets, Cat had his first 20-20 night of the season, but they need to do a better job collectively rebounding. And maybe Šarić can help out a little bit there. I think that they improve offensively in the front court with that, but defensively it's going to be tough.
How would you attack? I mean, offensively, both of them can shoot threes and spread the floor a little bit. The thing that I've noticed about Šarić that maybe doesn't get talked about a lot, he's a pretty good passer.
Yeah.
When he gets into the lane and he can make some plays with guys that are cutting to the rim, or he can, you know, he can put the ball on the deck a little bit and drive in and kick it out if need be. That's a part of his game that I honestly, up until a couple of days ago, didn't really realize that he was actually pretty good at.
Yeah, he's not a one-dimensional offensive player. He's not a guy that's just stand there, catch and shoot. He can do other things offensively. He can handle the ball a little bit, which is definitely good for someone his size at 6'10", as we said. Right around half of his shots are coming as spot-up three-pointers. He's not a guy that's ever going to take pull-up threes, but roughly 50% of his shots are coming as spot-up three-pointers. That does mean he's generating quite a bit of offense elsewhere. Now, if you look at Covington, it's quite a bit different. Is close to 70% of his shots are spot-up three-pointers. He's not a guy that's going to necessarily put it on the floor that well. The bright side about that is almost the other 30% is coming at the rim, so he's shooting good shots for the most part, and that's something that the Wolves definitely need added in. But as far as passing goes, listen, Šarić isn't going to come in and lead the team in assists. But for a guy his size to be a capable passer, it opens up so many things offensively that maybe weren't quite there before.
I'm just so fascinated at how this front court is, how Tibbs is going to manage the minutes of this front court, because you have guys that are all there that are worthy of minutes, and there's just not gonna be somebody's gonna have to fall out of this rotation. We've talked about it even with Dane yesterday. somebody's going to have to be sort of the sacrificial lamb in terms of getting significant run on the front court because there's just too many guys. You can't, I mean, you can't not play Cat. He's your best player now.
Sure.
At this
yeah,
point.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But you have Taj and you have AT and now you have Šarić and Gorgui is still there. So somebody, maybe even two guys, may have to fall out of the rotation here. And I don't know. I'm just still very curious as to how Tibbs is going to handle this.
Yeah, and if I had to guess who's going to fall out of the rotation,
probably
I think
Gorgui, right?
I would think Gorgui and maybe Josh Okogie. I think it would be a mistake because I
don't
want to
see that.
I know, and a lot of people don't, and you shouldn't want to see that because in the opportunities he's had, he's done really well. But Covington's coming in. He's a dude that plays that same spot.
And Rose
and
is,
Jeff Teague is back.
And
Rose
you can't
is
bench
playing
Rose
well.
Right
and
now,
Wiggins, he's when he's healthy, there just might not be the minutes for Okogie. And that's something that sucks because I view him as part of the future of this team.
Yeah. Man.
But if I had to guess, and this isn't sourced, nothing, this is me guessing because they've been very close to the vest about playing time with this group, with the starting lineup for this group. And in their defense, the new guys have not yet practiced as we record this. The first time they'll actually be able to do things on the court with the Wolves will be shoot around on Wednesday prior to the game against the Pelicans. So I understand them rightfully playing this close to the vest. But if I had to guess, Gorgui and Josh Okogie would be the two guys that see their minutes drastically cut.
Going back to the front court, what sort of combinations with the four and the five would you use the most or would be probably the most effective from a two-way standpoint? I mean, we know with the skill set that Kat and Šarić have, I mean, offensively, that could be really, really, really good. But defensively, it would be taking a step back.
Mm-hmm.
So in your mind, like what sort of front court combination would be the best sort of two-way? One, you know, a combination that would work, that would give you some good offensive production and also be able to help you out defensively at the same time.
I don't know about the four and the five, if there's a new combination that does that for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're probably best defensively with Tolliver or Gibson and Towns at the four and the five, which not great, but anything. They just don't have a very good defender at those spots.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it comes down to is your best defensive lineup is having Covington and Josh Okogie on the floor at the same time. Having one of them play the two, one of them play the three. You can even get away with playing Robert Covington at the four at times.
Yeah.
And Tibbs brought that up. So maybe, yes, to answer your question, Towns and Covington at the four and the five would be the best thing defensively they could put out there just because Covington's probably your best defensive four, even though he's not a four. I mean, yeah, he's 6'9", but he's a wing. He's not a power forward. He's a dude he could play the 2-3 or the four, but I think most of the time we're going to see him at the three, and that's his natural position. But you could put him at the four.
So you and I were both at the game last night, the Brooklyn game, the first game post the Jimmy Butler era officially.
First era, the first game of the new era Wolves. How about that?
Yeah. And,
what a time.
That was an interesting night. I go back probably about 5 or 6 years, probably the last time, well, maybe about 4 years ago, the last time Target Center was probably that quiet and empty for a game. I mean, it is. There were, last year there was just so much anticipation with the Butler trade and, you know, they were actually a good team last year. And so everybody was showing up and they were selling out. They had their most sellouts in years, the most sellouts in a season.
And rightfully so.
And
I mean,
rightfully
they won
so.
47 games. They were a playoff team. They were on a 55 win clip until Butler got hurt.
And now it's like the Butler thing is over and it just feels like people are just mad and they're just like, I'm not. Even now you would think with the Butler trade being done, you would think people would come out and maybe, you know, maybe we'll see what happens tomorrow night, Wednesday night with you know, once we get the new guys in too. But I couldn't remember the last time Target Center was that quiet really from start to finish of a game.
Let me ask you this. It was The new guys were not playing. Mm-hmm. So there's no excitement. I get to see some new players I've never seen before.
Right.
It's the Brooklyn Nets coming to town. So, yes, the Nets are improved. And the Nets are a team that I have very much enjoyed to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But who on the Nets are you saying as a fan, I got to go see that guy? Like, there's no one. And even then, their best player was out sick. And there's second or third best player, depending on how you view Caris LeVert versus D'Angelo Russell, dislocated his foot in the first half.
Gosh, so sad to see.
Oh, it was terrible. But it's great news that nothing's broken, doesn't need surgery.
Absolutely.
Like, that is incredible news for Caris. And I mean, my heart goes out to him after seeing that on the floor. And if you want to talk about how quiet that arena was, discard everything with the game. Mm-hmm. That was the quietest I've ever heard a building that size. When he had the towel over his head on the floor, you could hear a pin drop inside the Target Center. And justifiably so. I mean, it should be quiet for that, but it's eerie how silent it got.
Yeah.
But getting back to that, and it's a Monday night.
Mm-hmm. And it's cold.
It's cold. Would
it was
you
like
have
10 degrees last night?
What would have changed between, and they're on a 5-game losing streak. What about last night would have been like, man, I got to get tickets and get to the Target Center tonight.
I know.
That's my defense of the fans not showing up. Like, why would you have gone last night? Now tomorrow night, Anthony Davis in town. New guys are going to be playing. It's a little bit different story, but Monday night, I don't blame them.
Yeah, it's just, I guess more so it just speaks to kind of where the team is at right now. And it might be different with the new players coming in and everything, but it's just amazing how just sort of people almost seemed a little bit checked out, at least for a couple of days, because it goes back to this Butler thing just went on and on and on and on and on. And really, up until Saturday morning, it didn't appear that there was going to be any end in sight for it. So, yeah, I don't know. We've talked about the expectations for this team the rest of the season. We know Tibbs is not going to – Tibbs needs to play the young guys. He really does.
But
he won't. And that's
– like Josh Okogie falling out of the rotation, which could happen. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, would be a terrible mistake. He's a guy that needs minutes to develop. He's someone that has shown already in the, 14 games that I don't even know if he's played in all 14 games. I don't believe he has.
He hasn't, no.
But he has shown early on that he is going to be a quality NBA player. He's a dude that can hang. The game hasn't been too big for him. He's stepped up in big moments. Like that three he hit Monday night, they were up 4 with 4 or 5 minutes left. Was 0-3 from 3 for the night, steps into one, knocks it down, gives the Wolves a 7-point lead. That was a big moment for him.
Mm-hmm.
Knocking down that shot is huge. And Kat talked about his maturity after the game, and that's something that stuck out to me. He's a young kid, a year removed from college, and he's hitting big shots. He's someone that needs to be on the floor. The only way he's going to get better is playing.
Yes.
He's not going to – he'll develop a little bit on the practice floor, but you learn – by playing in actual games. And that's something I don't think they can afford to take away from him.
Well, and you look at where this team is at on the defensive end, they're in the bottom of the league in defense.
And he's been your best defender.
And he's been your best defender. So it's like, why? I understand. Like, Wiggins, and I get it, the contract and all of that, and you're trying to get him to be a cornerstone of your franchise. But, man, Okogie is the real deal, man. I love this kid, and I think he's going to be fantastic. And he's giving you what a lot of other guys on the team are not giving you right now. He's defending. He's being disruptive on the defensive end. And to take him out of the rotation, which is kind of the fear right now, it would be very, very disappointing because, I mean, he helps you now defensively, and he figures to be a part of your future long term. So, I don't know.
And he's doing things better in all aspects of the game. Like, he made a pass to Derrick Rose in transition last night. That was really, really nice. It was probably the best pass he's thrown in his young NBA career. You're going to get moments where he looks like a rookie, but you're going to get moments like that where you can see flashes of this kid's going to be really good.
Yeah. I just it's just going to be a shame if he gets pulled out of the rotation. I'm just going to be really disappointed.
Would it shock you?
No, of course not. Would it shock me if Dario Saric is like getting like 12 minutes a night because Tolliver and Taj are playing a majority of those minutes at the four? That would be
a huge mistake too.
That would be a massive mistake. But again, like, would it shock me? Of course not, because that's been the track record of this head coach. So he has done, I mean, my thing with Tibbs is he has done so many things since he's been here that I totally thought he would end up doing. Like, everything that I, when he was hired, that I was afraid that he would do.
He did.
He ended up doing. Like, I was not in favor of bringing in Derrick Rose. Now, Derrick has played really well this year.
Yeah, he proved you wrong.
And I will give him 100% credit for that. He's been fantastic.
Hit three more threes last night.
Derrick
Rose for the three-point shootout, man.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, it's unbelievable. I mean, if he keeps this up, he's going to end up playing the three-point contest, right?
I don't see how you cannot include him.
If we get to what? Because when do they usually decide that? Like,
early February, I think.
Early February, right? So if we get to early February and he's still shooting like 45% from three, how do you not put him in the three-point contest?
If there was one player in like 2012 that, if you would have asked me who's the least likely guy that's a guard to be in the 3-point shootout in 6 years, I would have said Derrick Rose. The man's shooting 48% from
that's
three.
Unreal.
48%.
A guy who's been in the league for, this is what, year number 9? Eleven.
His first year was 08-09. Obviously, he missed the one season and he only played 10 games in another, so.
But
25 games in another, so he's had, I mean.
But basically, my point is, basically, it's a guy who's been in the league for a decade plus, and he's hit, what, 30% of his threes for his career? Maybe not even that, 27, 28%.
I mean, if we're talking before this year, I don't know. But it is remarkable that, I mean, there are some big names that he's in front of. 3-point field goal percentage wise
this year,
yeah, like it's Steph Curry is not ahead of him in 3-point field goal percentage. He is
okay.
Steph's 1% better.
Okay,
but you know who's not? Klay Thompson.
CJ McCollum probably isn't.
CJ McCollum, I don't see him on this list. Kevin Durant, not on the list.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking some of the greatest shooters of all time.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose is shooting better than right now. Chris Middleton, who had a similar playoff run in terms of three-point marksmanship as Derrick Rose did last year for the Bucks.
77% or something, you told me?
No, that was J.R. Smith against Toronto.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But it felt like Middleton didn't miss against the Celtics in their series. He's not on the list.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking, this dude has been unreal.
I remember it. For some reason, it reminds me of, you might be too young to remember this, but when the Wolves played the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals in 04,
mm-hmm.
and they played game 6 at Staples, and the Wolves are fighting for their playoff lives, they're facing elimination down 3-2, and they've got the game close in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden, Kareem Rush, Brandon Rush's older brother,
wow,
just goes off. He hits like 4 or 5 threes in a row in the fourth quarter because they would throw the ball into Shaq, and you know, Flip would have, rather was Michael Olowokandi or Oliver Miller or something. Yes, Oliver Miller was on the Timberwolves in 2004.
Goodness gracious, Manny.
Yeah, I know. Or Irvin Johnson or somebody or Mad Dog. Flip would send somebody over to from the perimeter to double team on Shaq. And Kareem Rush would get left open, and they'd kick it out to him, and he would drill it. And he basically, one quarter of shooting for Kareem Rush, where he shot like 80% from three, buried the Wolves in the 2004 Western Conference Finals.
Rose is out-shooting Buddy Hield from deep. He's a pretty good shooter, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Wayne Ellington.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, Wolves fans are familiar with Wayne, yeah.
Tobias Harris.
I love Tobias Harris.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah,
Nikola Jokic from Denver, pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that he's it's unbelievable.
Just
Derrick freaking Rose in 20
Danny, this can't keep up, though.
He is out shooting Lou Williams by 12% from
Danny,
three.
This can't keep up.
But what if it does?
I know. I tweeted that out last night during the game.
Like,
after
it
he hit
can't.
Like two threes, I was like, Derrick Rose is not going to keep this up, but what if he does?
Like, there's no way he can continue outshoot Damian Lillard by 11% from behind the three-point arc. But what if he does?
What if he does?
What if he does?
What if Derrick Rose, like, participates in the three-point contest and wins it? A guy who's shot, like, under 30% from three for his entire career, out of the blue, wins a three-point contest.
Kyle Korver is one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time, and he's shooting 10% less from three than Derrick Rose right now.
All right. We're in the Twilight Zone. That's enough. Like, we're in the Twilight Zone. This is, yeah. Well, what are you looking for the rest of this week before we get out of here? Because I'm very curious to see. I want to see how much Šarić plays. Mm-hmm. I want to see the impact that Covington has defensively. I want to see if Okogie's, hopefully he does not fall out of the rotation, but he may possibly fall out of it.
I hope not.
But what are you sort of keeping your eye on here for the rest of the week?
I want to see how these new guys are able to assimilate into the Wolves culture and on the floor. And it's a tough thing to change teams in the middle of the season. You have to learn all new basketball things. And I know at the end of the day, you know, put the ball in the hoop. The game of basketball is a game of basketball. But you have to learn new defensive system, learn a new offensive system. And you also have to relocate your life. Mm. And I think that's something that gets lost on a lot of people is they don't realize that, well, yes, Robert Covington's making $11 million a year, and these guys are all making, for the most part, more money than we could ever imagine. But they're humans, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they have clothes and family and cars and things that they have to worry about. Okay, how am I getting this from Philadelphia to Minneapolis? How am I going to do that? Because that's a real-life problem that people don't think about when guys get traded. They think, oh, well, he's just going to go play basketball somewhere else. They don't realize his whole life is in Philadelphia still, and he has to figure out how to transport all of that to where he is now. Luckily for them, and I think this is the perfect time for them to make this trade, is they're home for 10 of the next 12. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that really helps out with this transitional period for all these new guys. And with everyone else getting to know them, it's great that they won't be short on practice time moving forward because they play every other day for like the next week, and that's something that's good for them, and they don't have to travel.
All right. Well, we will see. We got a new era of Timberwolves basketball that's in front of us, and I'm excited to see it. I'm a big fan of Robert Covington. I've liked him for about 3 or 4 years, and I've always sort of envisioned him like, man, it'd be nice if the Wolves had.
And he's a good story.
Robert Covington.
He's a guy that went undrafted, played in the G League for a year, and then found his way with Philadelphia and went through some pretty dark days with the Sixers. I mean, he was on that 10-72 win team.
Yeah, that's whew. And now he comes into this situation, and he's got to make another adjustment to his career. So it should be it'll be interesting, to say the least. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes, podcastone.com, and of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. Follow Danny at Real D Cunningham, right?
There you go.
Yeah, I had to make sure I got that right. Real D Cunningham on Twitter. You can find me as well at MannyHill84 on Twitter as well. For Danny Cunningham, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. And we're taping another edition of Raised by Wolves on Thursday, so stay tuned for that. Until then, enjoy your Wolves basketball.